Hey, listeners, today on the podcast, Pastor John is going to be interviewing Pastor Renee. We're in week two of our immigration series, and even as we were prepping for today's episode, Renee shared some stuff with us that we really didn't even know about. Man, he's going to share some of the inside scoop, like what's really happening with this immigration crisis. I think you're going to be blown away by this. We're going to be talking about amnesty and open borders and how we can be compassionate as Christians. But how should we think about this? But how should we think about this biblically? I think you're going to love it. So here's John, Pastor Renee. Take a listen.
All right, Renee. Last week we talked about the idea of should we have an open border, and so if you guys missed that conversation, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to last week's podcast before you jump into this one. But Renee, today we want to talk about what do we do with the situation we already have, right? So even if we were to control the border more effectively, even if we were to reduce the amount of illegal immigration, we have all of these individuals and all these families who are already here in the country, you know, many of them working, many of them productive. What do we do with that? You know, is amnesty the answer? Do we just kind of make a blanket statement that if you've been in here for X number of years, and you don't have a criminal record, for example, you're good to go? And as Brian was just sharing, you actually shared that in some ways, I don't think we'd call it amnesty, but in some ways, really, there already is a temporary amnesty available. So can you just, for the average listener who has no clue about how this really works, and you're speaking from a guy who's helped many, many families who are in this stage. I mean, you actually have a family that you're housing in your home right now from Ecuador because you practice what you preach, Renee. That's one of the things I love about you. Your heart's as big as anyone I know. What does it really look like for someone who comes across the border now, who comes across illegally? In a sense, it sounds like there already is sort of a temporary amnesty. So can you tell us how it works now?
Well, yeah. So here's the thing, right? Once they cross the border, they are released into the U.S., right? And they get a court hearing. And so most of these people come in, they go to their court hearing, and now they, you know, get another court hearing for later down the line. So they basically get about 2 to 3 years of staying in this country. Like I have an Ecuadorian family, like you mentioned, and they crossed about probably like 4 months ago. Obviously, they're, you know, fleeing from persecution. They're you know, they really got a legitimate case. But, you know, when they went to court, now their next court hearing is until 2027. So we're looking at 3 years of them being in this country. And then the way it works is like they have to file within the first year of they enter the country, they have to file for asylum. Now, once they file for asylum and the court gets it, that's when they get their first court hearing. So they go to the court and they, you know, file it. Now the court will send them home with another date for 20, you know, for 3 years down the line, because that's how backed up they are. So then within those, once they file, they have 150 days that they have to wait for them to apply for a work permit. Now they have a work permit plus a social security number. Now they can actually get a license to drive and work legally in the country. So basically, they're here already with that, you know, if we want to call it some kind of amnesty or whatever that is, they're already here. And they're going to be working for the next 3 years. Because if not, how will they be sustained, right? So most of these people are coming in right now. They get that window. So they'll have 2 to 3 years to be in this country till they get their next court hearing. And then the judge will decide if they actually qualify for asylum or not. And if they don't, that's when they get deported.
Okay, so I'm just going to go back and kind of go through that step by step, Renee, to make sure I understand what you're saying, make sure our listeners understand. So when they first come into the country, how quickly do they have to file for asylum? Did you say within 150 days?
Within a year. So they have 1 year to file for asylum once they enter the country.
And so what are they doing in that first year? They don't have a permit to work yet, but are they basically finding a job, you know, where the employer's not verifying, or are they relying on government assistance? What's happening that first year?
So here's the thing, right? Most employers that have under 50 employees, I don't think they're required to e-verify because they're a very, you know, a small company. So most companies like Walmart, right, or big, you know, big names, they have to e-verify everybody. So they cannot work there. But most employers that don't have that will employ these people even if they don't have papers.
All right. So we have a family that comes across the border within the first year of being here. They have to file for asylum. What if they don't do that? What happens at the end of that year? I mean, I can't imagine with how backed up we are, as you mentioned, that anyone is actively trying to find them. So at the end of that first year, if they never filed for asylum, let's say the following year they get picked up on a traffic stop or something like that, then they would face deportation. Is that how it works currently?
Well, it depends. So it all depends if when they enter, they put a hold on them. So like if somebody that is an illegal immigrant has a hold from immigration, and once the police or whoever stops them, you know, searches, it'll have that. And it'll be up to that policeman to either keep them there and act like ICE or let them go. So it just depends, right, on whatever traffic stop it was.
So if they did file for asylum within that first year, like, you know, like they're supposed to, like they're required, then you mentioned they've got 150 days where they can file for a work permit. So, and mm-hmm. I know you can't speak for the government, but what is the intention of allowing someone to stay in the country but not allowing them to get a work permit for 150 days? I mean, that's 5 months. So is the government supporting them during that time?
That is supposedly what is going on right now. It's not what happened before. So right now, it's a new thing, right? Right now, supposedly, that's where this false dream and false hope comes in place, because all these people are coming in and the government is sheltering them, right? Taking care of them, feeding them. And obviously, I don't think they're getting money. Oh, I don't know if they are, but that is what's going on. So most of them, they won't stay just like that. Most people that are coming in, what I've seen, are actually going into the work field. I mean, illegally, but they're going in. So they're being plugged in somewhere to work. So some probably are not, but I think the vast majority of people are working.
I know you mentioned there seems to be, at least currently in your experience, and I know this is happening here, you know, where we live in northern Utah, kind of a focus concentration on immigrants coming in from Venezuela. And you had some insights on that. And you feel like maybe there's an agenda behind that. Tell us a little bit about why you feel that way and what you're seeing.
Well, if you start paying attention to all the TikTok videos that are going viral, most of them, the vast majority, are about Venezuelan illegal immigrants. And the way they're portraying them is by, you know, sitting at a beach, you know, having fun, right? Or being at a party and having fun and just talking about the government supporting them. So they're sending these videos out into these countries and basically inviting people to come over because that's the life that they're supposedly, you know, living here in the U.S. But in reality, that's not the truth. I mean, but, you know, that's why I say something's behind all this. Somebody's playing with this because, you know, you got videos where Venezuelans holding kids and saying, look, this is what this country's about. Come to the country, you know, get kids, and the government will support you. Government's going to give you money. And so think about that being thrown out there to our country, right? Now, we got all the Americans, right, watching these kind of videos, and something stirring up inside of everyone, right? Because you're looking at videos like this, and it's not 100% accurate. I mean, I'm pretty sure there is some truth to it, but I feel like something's behind it because that is not the truth. Most people that are coming in are not just from Venezuela, but that is the one country being targeted in these videos.
And so do you think those videos are they using those to promote and to kind of propagandize to get more people from Venezuela to come here? Is that the motive behind those videos, or is the motive to create dissension and frustration and animosity from U.S. citizens against people coming in from Venezuela?
I think it's both.
Okay.
I really do believe it's both, because I think that it's playing both fields, right? I mean, you got people in extreme poverty in Venezuela. People, I mean, they don't have no money whatsoever. You got a corrupt government that is not going to allow anybody. I mean, they dictate when you eat, when you don't, right? So obviously, they look at these videos from here. Whoever's posting these videos TikTok videos, and they're showing this to other people because people are seeing them. Obviously, they're going to flee, and they're going to pay the price to come over here. I mean, they have to suffer crossing from country to country to country in order to get to the border. Once they get to the border, obviously they feel like freedom. But once they get here, you also see videos of Venezuelan refugees, right, saying, where is what we were promised? Where is it? Because they come to a reality that is not what they saw in the videos, because that's what's happening, you know? So these videos play in both parts, right? I think it's creating, you know, within us Americans, it's creating this feeling, right? Like, man, this is getting out of hand, and these people are just taking what we have and taking it away from our kids, and, you know, what's next, right? But then they're also sending this in a way that it's creating a false dream to the people that are across from the border to come over here, and this is the free country where they're going to get whatever they want, and it's not happening. So I think it's playing both fields. Something's behind it, I feel.
So when they say we're not getting what we promised, I mean, do you think they're referring basically to just what they've heard through social media, or do you think there's even an organized sales pitch, if you will, from their government or from our government to come here and receive all these benefits?
Yes, of course. Because think about it. How can masses of people get together at the same time? That's impossible.
Okay.
Someone's organizing. I mean, you're talking about 100,000 people getting together to come across the border. How does that happen? I mean, let's think about it. Let's be real. How does 100,000 people get together and cross at the same time? How does that happen? There's got to be someone organizing this massive, people coming across. There's something behind it. I mean, there's no way. I mean, we've always had illegal immigrants entering the country, right? It's always happened. I mean, it's always always been a problem, but not in this level. Not in the level that we're seeing, where masses of people are coming in across. That means somebody's organizing. That means somebody's sending a message. You know, whatever message that is, it's just cross and we'll take you in. Because that's what's happening at the border. People get to the border and they're just being taken in. I mean, think about it. What system was in place for us to be ready for this? There's nothing. Right? There's nothing in place. That's why we're getting people scattered all over the different states, right? Because there was nothing in place to shelter these thousands and thousands of people crossing the border. But something's behind it, enticing people to just leave everything behind. You know, some of them have to face death. Some of them, I mean, women have to be raped. I mean, all the struggles people have to get through to get to the U.S., I mean, people in the right mind wouldn't just abandon and expose themselves to this kind of level of danger if there wasn't something hidden behind this whole mass of people getting together to come across.
Well, in all of our conversations, guys, really our hope is to try to help us think biblically and process things from a biblical perspective. So we want to make sure we start incorporating, you know, God's word and how we should see this. And really, the question that we are looking at today is, should believers be in favor of amnesty for those individuals who are already here, who are working, who are productive? You know, is it some sort of blanket amnesty? Is it a process where, you know, maybe they get preferential treatment if they've been here for a certain amount of time on the road to citizenship? So these are just some of the things. And Renee and I are going to break this down really to two different perspectives. I want to talk about what the government's response should be, and I want to talk about what our response as individuals should be, because my perspective is it's different. And Renee might have a different perspective. And as we get into it, you know, I certainly want to give Renee a chance to hear his perspective on it. But so I want to talk about the government's response in regards to amnesty. And I'm just going to read a couple of verses, and then I want to give Renee a chance to come in and give his perspective. The first one is Proverbs 24, verses 24 and 25. "It is wrong to show favoritism when passing judgment. A judge who says to the wicked, 'You are innocent,' will be cursed by many people and denounced by the nations. But it will go well for those who convict the guilty. Rich blessings will be showered on them." And then another one I want to point out is Leviticus 19:15 says, "Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great, but judge your neighbor fairly." And so, Renee, when I look at it, again, this is from the government's perspective. I'm not talking about you and I as individuals. And I mean, we've already shared how you're housing a family right now. I've never housed a family, but certainly I've helped financially, you know, families here in the Valley that I know are not here legally. You know, they're either in that 3-year period that you were talking about, or, you know, prior to what's happened recently, they were here. You know, they were here illegally, right? They hadn't gone through the proper channels. And I know God has called me to love them and care for them. But I would submit that a sort of blanket amnesty policy where we just said, hey, if you've been here for a certain amount of time, then you're automatically granted citizenship, to me, goes against these two verses that we just talked about. That would be a perversion of justice. That what we're doing is we're telling those families who went through all the proper channels or who've been waiting for years to try and gain citizenship that you're not going to have that, you know, that just the timing was wrong. To me, that's a perversion of justice. Again, I'm speaking from the government's perspective. So what would your perspective be on that as far as like a blanket amnesty program?
It's tough because I don't think the word amnesty actually, I think it's misused. I don't think there's such a thing. You know, back in the 80s, I think the only way that the government back then, I think it was Ronald Reagan, created an amnesty program through work. So like even if you enter into the country illegally, there was a window where you were, you know, were granted to get your residence green card, basically, through work. And most of the families that were here and that qualified for that actually got it, right? And I was one of the benefits like that through my parents. But ever since then, there has nothing been set in place. I mean, I have illegal immigrants within our country, in our, you know, campuses, right, that have been waiting for something they've been here for 20 plus years, right? They're waiting for their kids to become U.S. citizens that were born here to become, you know, to become actually 21 in order for them to be able to ask for their parents so that they can get their residency. And even that is hard to do. So, you know, because the law is changing. Now you got a conflict because you got people that have been here for years and years. I mean, you're like about 20 plus years waiting for a window so that they can be legalized, right? And it's not happening. And now you got these thousands of people coming in and being permitted to be in this country with a working permit and a social security number, where these 20, you know, people that have been here for 20 years don't even have that. They've been working under the radar. They've been working with, you know, I mean, with companies that don't request or require legal documentation to work. You see what I'm saying? So this it's hard to say, you know, where, you know, how can the government, you know, take care of this. It's a hard issue because I don't think that, you know, that, like, to me personally, like, I feel like we shouldn't break the law. I think that we should abide by the law. But the problem is that there's nothing in place for these people to actually, you know, be legal in this country. There's nothing right now that offers that. So when we talk about amnesty and should these people be granted, obviously it's tough because if you want to, you know, abide by the law, then obviously these people broke the law when they enter. And basically we all did. I mean, all illegal, like immigrants, we all broke the law when we enter here illegally. You know, the fortunate part of it is that some of us were able to fix our status, but it was a hard, long road. And now, today, that road doesn't exist, right? Even if people are trying to legalize their status in this country, there's the probability of some of them being asked to leave the country, okay, for, you know, like either they get pardoned for 10 years and then apply for you know, legal status. In some cases, it's you got to get out of the country for a year. And in some cases, they pardon you, right? You have to ask for pardon from the government for you to stay here when you're not fixing your papers. So that's something that families will have to face when they're, you know, legalizing themselves through either their kids that are now of age that can ask for them. And so that's the only way. But there's nothing in place that can say, you know, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, to vote for one or the other. You know what I mean? Like to say, you know, should the government pardon these people and just legalize them, right? It's tough because if we look at it, they broke the law when they entered, right? And they're being here illegally. So now is that how do we come up with a system where we can, like, that can be right? So that we can legalize all these people. Like right now, you got people that are families that probably don't even remember their country because they've been here forever. You got families that have kids that were born here that if they were to get deported, you know, you're taking kids to a country that they don't know. Because would they separate themselves? I don't think so. So it's tough. So the only way right now, I think that in order for people to become legal is, I think this is the only way, is kids becoming of age, 21 and older, that were born here, that are U.S. citizens, that they can petition to, you know, for their parents. That's the only way. Otherwise, there's nothing else.
Well, I'm going to say something that may rub some of our listeners the wrong way. I hope not. But I think as individuals, we don't have the right as Christians to treat American citizens differently than we would citizens of any other country. In other words, for us to show preferential treatment individually to Americans, I don't think you can defend that biblically. That's my perspective. I love this country. I thank God often that I was born in the United States. I thank God for the freedoms we have. But my primary citizenship is in heaven. My primary citizenship is with the family of God. And so I don't believe biblically I have the freedom, if you will, to give preferential treatment to American citizens over non-citizens. But that's me as an individual. I do believe that the purpose of government, it's not a providerment, it's a government, right? I don't think the government's set up to just provide for us, but a government has a primary responsibility to its citizenship. So the United States government should put American citizens, in my opinion, and I think this is a biblical perspective, should give them preferential treatment. And so I just bring that up because I'm going to bring up some financial statistics about the cost of illegal immigration. This is from a study that's just a year old. It was back in 2023, an immigration reform study. Now, you could say that they have a bias to this study. I recognize that there may be some bias, but I think these statistics, these are just numbers. So whether they have a bias or not, these are just the numbers. But the net cost of illegal immigration for the U.S. at the federal, state, and local levels was over $150 billion in 2023. And the way the study arrived at this number was they subtracted the tax revenue paid by illegal aliens. So again, like you mentioned, Ray, many of these families, they're working, they're paying taxes, you know, they're contributing to the economy. But the tax revenue paid, estimated by illegal aliens, was $32 billion. But the gross negative economic impact was $182 billion. So the estimated net cost of illegal immigration was approximately $116 billion back in 2017. In just 5 years, the cost to Americans increased by almost $35 billion. So if we break that down to each American taxpayer, that's a cost to each American taxpayer of about $1,150. I mean, that's substantial, right? That's substantial that it's having an impact on the citizens of the United States of America. So again, me as an individual, I'm not saying that that's my responsibility or that I should give preferential treatment, but I do believe the government has a primary responsibility to its citizenship. So they've got to figure something out. And I don't know that you and I are going to come up with all the answers here, but it just doesn't seem to me that some sort of blanket amnesty policy makes sense financially. And again, I'm just not sure that it's biblical. I'm not sure that it's just. I'm not sure that it's fair to have individuals who, you know, just came in this country within the last year or two to receive all the same benefits of someone who A, has been here legally or has been here, you know, illegally, but they've been contributing to our economy. They've been abiding by, you know, our laws outside of the immigration law for 20 years. And all of a sudden they go back to their home country and this family that just came in, you know, 18 months ago gets citizenship. To me, that just doesn't seem to add up.
Yeah, no, that is the tough thing. I mean, that's what I, you know, me as a Hispanic pastor, that's what I got to face with all both sides, right? Because I have both people. I have people that are been here forever, right? And now they're seeing these people coming in with all these benefits that they're getting. I mean, a lot of them are getting housing. A lot of them are getting health benefits. A lot of them are getting so many things that these families that have been here contributing for 20 plus years never got. And it's tough because now you got, you know, how do you balance that? You know, how do you balance that situation? You know, and it's creating, you know, it's creating a lot of, you know, feelings in different sides, right? I feel like immigration, it's a tough subject because you're never going to stop. There's no way that the border, I don't know what we need to build in order to stop people from coming in across, right? People are coming in regardless. But, you know, to say that people that have been here for 20 plus years that are illegal immigrants, but that have been contributing to society, that have been paying their dues, paying their taxes and everything. I mean, how do we come up with a system that makes them legal, right? Without creating more issues. I mean, without, you know, breaking the law or anything like that. I mean, it's tough. It's tough to answer.
Well, Renee, God clearly cares about the foreigner. God clearly cares about, you know, those on the fringe. I want to read a couple of verses from the Old Testament on how the Israelites were instructed to treat the foreigners who were living in the land with them. The first one is Deuteronomy 10, 18 and 19. It says, "He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt." Leviticus 19:10 says, "Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God." And then the last one, "When a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I am the Lord your God." Now, obviously, they didn't have immigration laws at the time, Renee. You know, the foreigners who were living in the land of Israel weren't breaking the law to be in there. So do these verses apply equally to the situation of someone who is in the country illegally? Do we have to put, you know, an asterisk next to them, or should we take these literally for those that are in the country illegally? What would be your perspective on that?
Well, I mean, honestly, if we go biblically, right, God wants us to love everyone, regardless of what their status is, right? That is God, that he wants us to love people, right? Now, I know that most people will defer, right? Because, you know, some people feel very, very strong about these people breaking the law, and they have broken the law, and, you know, they might feel like, you know, that's not a biblical way to say we got to love them, even if they broke the law, right? Unfortunately, that's where we are. But God calls us to love everyone. But here's the thing that I will say, and that I would strongly urge, you know, like even illegal immigrants, is if they're coming into our country, and I say our country because I'm part of this country now, right? If they're coming into our country, I would say, you know, one, for them not to depend, you know, on the resources that this government has, right? I mean, obviously, U.S. citizens should have first dibs on that. Like, if they are really struggling, you know, like, you know, with financial situations and stuff like that, those resources that are in place should be for the people that, you know, are citizens of this country. Now, obviously, that's going to open a different door, you know, but I feel like most of the people that are coming into this country that are illegal, you know, illegals, they're coming to work. They're coming to, you know, pay whatever they have to pay, but they're not coming to, you know, depend. And I think the government should, you know, put something in place that in order for them to get a legal status, that they don't depend on the resources of this country. That instead of depending on the resources of this country, they contribute to this country, right? Because I feel like sometimes that's why people feel very negative towards illegal immigrants, because they feel like illegal immigrants are just coming in to take all the resources away from U.S. citizens. So, I mean, obviously, when you read those passages, it says, you know, don't plow your field the second time, right? Leave whatever's on the ground for, you know, the foreigners that are living amongst you. Obviously, you know, if we look at these illegal immigrants and we look at the vast majority, they're not here to rob anything. They're here to work, and usually jobs that nobody else wants to do. That's why when I listen to some people, they're like, they're coming to take our jobs. They're coming to do this. They're really not. I mean, that's my perspective, right? They're really not. They're coming to work their butt off. And I know hands on, I know most illegal immigrants, that's what they come to do. I mean, I can vouch for my parents. They came to this country and they worked their butt off to get to where we are now, right? And I look at, and if I look back, I look at all these illegal immigrants that are striving. I mean, I'm not saying that all of them, right? I mean, there are some people that probably are, you know, here for the wrong reasons, right? But I think that at the end of the day, we got to show compassion. I mean, you got to look at what drove these people to get out from their countries. And I know that we shouldn't, you know, that the governments failed them and all that, I get it. But yet they're still here. Now that they're here, what should we do? I mean, should we discriminate? Should we go against them? Should we, you know, as Christians, right? What should we do? I mean, what would God ask us to do in this situation? I feel like we got to show compassion. We got to love people, right? But I think we have to also try to stay away from all the negativity from social media that portrays illegal immigrants in a bad way, that will make us feel like, you know, negative towards them.
Yeah, I think your perspective on government resources is important because, again, I think the call to government is different than the call to individuals. So I would agree that U.S. citizens should get priority treatment for government resources. I actually believe that pretty strongly. But I think for the church, it's not the same criteria. Like as a pastor, as a Christian, as a church, if I have two families who come into the church and they need financial help, I do not think it's biblical to give preferential treatment to the U.S. citizen over the illegal immigrant. Again, as an individual and as a church, I don't see a way in the Bible to justify that, but I absolutely see for government that the government should give priority treatment to its own citizens, because that's part of the role of government. Again, I don't think the government should be a providerment, even for U.S. citizens. I mean, there are plenty of U.S. citizens who are milking the government and shouldn't be, right? That's definitely not something that only illegal immigrants do. We have a lot of U.S. citizens who could be working, who should be working, and instead they're just milking the government. So that's a whole nother conversation on its own, right? Paul said, if you don't work, you don't eat. Now, certainly there are some exceptions where people physically can't or mentally can't, and we need to care for those people, but there are a lot of people who should be working and should be providing for themselves that aren't. What about Renee? So if blanket amnesty isn't the answer, if deportation is part of it, particularly if someone breaks the law, what would you say to the person who brings up the argument that if you use deportation, you're going to be breaking families up, that that's not a Christian thing to do, that's not a loving thing to do? Is there ever a time where you would be against deportation, Renee, or are you always against deportation? Help us think biblically through that, or is that a different animal than, say, if someone breaks another law? And the reason I ask that is, for example, let's say that I'm a U.S. citizen and I get arrested for burglary. My family is going to be broken up, right? I don't get to stay and live with my family. I'm going to go to prison. So I feel like this argument that if we use deportation, you're breaking up families, that somehow that's unique to the immigration issue, I think is an unfair argument, because families are broken up all the time when a law is broken. So I would just love to hear your perspective on that. Is there ever a time for deportation? Tell me what you think, and tell me what you think the biblical perspective is on that.
So here's what I say now, even to, you know, the families. When I look at all the illegal immigrant families and they're Christians coming to church and all that stuff, and even when they're not, I say this: look, you came into this country. You have one thing against you. You broke the law by entering illegally. That's it. Don't contribute more to that, in a sense of like, don't come here and be a drunk and get caught driving drinking, because then you're not going to, I'm sorry, but you're not going to, I'm not going to feel pity. I'm not going to feel like, oh, compassionate, because you're contributing more, you know, against you. So to me, if you get caught, if you're an illegal immigrant, you're drinking, right? You're a father, you're drinking, you're out in your car, knowing that you can hurt somebody. To me, if that person gets deported and the family's broken, I'm okay with that. And the reason why is because he should have not been doing that in the first place. And somebody might argue, well, you know, somebody can be an alcoholic. That's still not an excuse. To me, if you're contributing more to, I mean, you already broke the law by entering illegally. That's something that we got to understand. There's no choice on that. I mean, some people may argue, yes, there is, you know, you could enter legally to the country. It's hard to do so. There's no way. There's no way right now to enter legally to the country. So that's one. But once they're here, if they're breaking the law, if they're, you know, doing dumb things like burglary or stealing or things like that, and you know you're an illegal immigrant and you're putting your family at that position, then I am okay for you to get deported, because you shouldn't be, right? If you're here illegally and your goal is to work, then be a law-abiding citizen and abide by the laws in this country and work your butt off, build your family, provide a future for them. To me, that right there, I would feel bad if, like, the random Joe got detained at a company, right, because there was a raid, you know, of, immigration raid, and these families that are working hard that don't have no criminal record besides entering the country illegally, then I would be against that kind of deportation. Because that would be, I mean, really a hard thing on the whole family. But in the other hand, if the family, you know, the husband or whatever is out there committing crimes and doing all this stuff and puts his family at that in that position, then yes, of course, I'm all for that kind of deportation. But, you know, so it's a mixed feeling, right? Like, it's tough to say deportation is the answer. I mean, like you said, you know, U.S. citizens, if we get thrown in jail, families are being broken. But we put ourselves in that position, right? We drove ourselves to that. Now, illegal immigrants, right, if they're driving themselves to that, then there shouldn't be no sympathy on that. That is the consequences of your decision. That is what you are choosing to put your family through. So if you get deported, I'm not going to vouch for you. I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah, look, I'm a pastor and I should be compassionate towards you because you broke the law, even though, you know, you had already broken it by entering illegally, but now you're contributing more. No, that's the wrong message. But, you know, obviously that's where I would stand.
Well, it's a complicated issue, and I don't think we're going to, you know, solve all the government's dilemma today in this conversation. But I do want to say this to our listeners, regardless of the government's response, right, the Christian's response is to treat everyone with dignity and respect. Everyone that we come into contact with, you know, Jesus told us to love our neighbors as ourselves. And someone asked him, well, who is my neighbor, right? Jesus, as he was teaching this, said, well, who is my neighbor? They were looking for justification to have people that they didn't have to love. And Jesus, if you know the story, tells the parable of the Good Samaritan when he was asked that question. And he picks someone that would have been the least likely person to care for this Jewish man that was laying in the ditch. You know, the hostility between the Jews and the Samaritans, if we think there's hostility between, you know, U.S. citizens and illegal immigrants, multiply that times 10. And that's the hostility between the Jews and the Samaritans. So really, guys, anyone we come into contact with, that's our neighbor. And that's who we're called to share the love of Jesus with. So again, I'm not advocating open borders. I'm not advocating blanket amnesty. I think, you know, my position on this hopefully is pretty clear, that I think the government does need to have more control over our border, that the government does need to figure out something to not reward people for breaking the law. But you and I as individuals, we are called to share the love of Jesus with everyone we come in contact with, regardless of their immigration status. So, Renee, I want to give you the chance for any final thoughts before we wrap up for today.
No, I totally agree on that, on what you just said. I think, you know, I mean, as Christians, right? I mean, we are called to love. And it is tough because, you know, some people are being put in a tough position. But at the end of the day, you know, that is what God has called us to do. Be compassionate to those that are coming, you know, that are here with us. You know, it doesn't matter their legal status. I mean, you know, as Christians, God is calling us to love people and to be compassionate, right? I mean, obviously, we can't solve every issue for the government. That's something, like you said, John, government's got to take control on the border. They have to come up with a system that, you know, that it's right. I mean, obviously, we can't solve anything for them. But I think as Christians, obviously, we're going to see more and more each day people that are coming in to our campuses, our churches, our community, and they're going to be in tough positions, and we're going to be called to love on them. And I think that is the key thing. Be compassionate.
Well, we're going to have one more conversation on this topic, and it's going to be, how do we show compassion? How do we show compassion, not just here, but how do we show compassion to those living in these countries that are so destitute or seeking asylum that they're trying to get to the United States? How do we show compassion to them? So I hope you join us for that next conversation. Continue this conversation with your small group, with your family, with your mentor. let's have a biblical perspective on immigration. Use these resources and more at pursuegod.org. We'll see you next time.